Welcome to the Run Shoot Diaries podcast. This is where we talk about managing your time and ways that helps you accomplish your running goals. Lace up to get your race up. Let's get moving. Hey, what's up everybody out there running on native land? And welcome to the Run Shoe Diaries podcast. I'm your host, Luis, aka Chico, and this is season 2, episode 6, making it broadcast number 16. Thank you for spending some of your precious time listening to the show. I appreciate it. I'm definitely not going to waste it. Lace up to get your race up and let's get moving. We're at the starting line with this episode's guest, and he is definitely used to wearing many different hats. From college graduate to hosting races and everything in between, this indigenous ultra runner is steadily and continuously putting in the hard work in all facets of the running game. So with that, get your running shoes on, push start on your watch, and let's welcome to the Run Shoe Diaries podcast, the Spokane Tribal Trail Runner himself, Mr. Danny Joe Brigman. Yes, sir.
How's it going? Good.
Well, welcome to the show, Danny Joe. So I feel that this is going to be a recurring theme throughout this episode, which is going to be a quote by pen name Lemony Snicket, a.k.a. Daniel Handler, when he stated, "If we wait until we're ready, then we will be waiting for the rest of our lives." So that being said, let's jump right into it and let's begin with the Fast Five. These are five rapid-fire questions that'll give us some quick insight about you, Danley the Manly. Let's go with question number one. When it comes to running, do you prefer roads or trails?
Definitely trails.
Question number two. Medals, buckles, or challenge coins?
I've never had a chance to get challenge coins, so I feel like that's not fair to them. But given that, I'll have to say buckles.
All right. But since you never had an opportunity to get some challenge coins, I think we're going to have some races coming up that I'm going to try to push you towards. So, yeah, we'll get
all
into
right.
that. Question number three. Besides athletics, what is your favorite pastime?
Probably anything outdoors, whether it's just playing with my kids outside or out hunting, hiking, anything like that. Anything outdoors.
Okay. Question number four. What is some advice that you would give to your younger self?
Not to always put so much pressure on yourself and to not compare yourself against others. You know, kind of run your own race, probably, whether that's literally running or just life in general.
Definitely. And question number five. What is something positive happening in your life right now?
Right now? Something positive. A few weeks away, but the first week of October, I'm going to have a baby boy.
Congratulations.
Yeah. That's thank awesome. You.
All right, so that was the Fast Five. Thank you for those answers. Now, Danny Joe, go ahead and give us your introduction.
All right. My name's Danny or Danny Joe. I'm a Spokane Tribal member, and I'm also a member of a band up in Canada. I'm sorry to my Canada family. I'm going to butcher this, but it's a Kamloops Shawemek. I was actually looking up the pronunciation right before this just to try and get the best I could. So that's where Kamloops and born and raised on my reservation and moved back here after college. And I work here now, work and live here.
That's awesome. Hey, I want to go back and rephrase one of your Fast Five answers. Number three, besides athletics, what is your favorite pastime? You said anything outdoors. Going through, you know, some of your profile and everything, I see a lot of hunting and everything. You a big hunter?
Yeah. Always with my dad that you met. And then my cousin Will, he hunts with us a lot too. Yeah, I've been hunting with my dad probably since I was like 3 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
And Will, that was the your cousin that was with you.
Yep.
Okay. That's awesome. So speaking of hunting and everything, by chance, have you trained using the Mountain Toughness app?
No, I haven't. I looked into it a little bit, but it's just so busy. Kind of just one extra thing. I know I would have benefited from it, but just time-wise, it was hard to really fit in.
Yeah, definitely. I recommend it. It'll something that's going to help you in both hunting and your running and everything. So check that out. Hey, so let's kick this off with your hometown. You said you were born and raised on the Spokane Reservation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in order to get a better understanding, of course, I do a little bit of research and everything. And so the first thing that pops up when I start researching the Spokane Reservation is a novel. What novel am I speaking about?
The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian.
Yes. Do you recall the author?
Yeah, Sherman Alexie.
Sherman Alexie. For those who don't know, and I just found out, but Sherman Alexie tells the story of Junior, a budding cartoonist growing up on the Spokane Indian Reservation. He's determined to take his future into his own hands. Junior leaves the res to attend an all-white farm town high school where the only other Indian is going to be the school mascot. And the book was based on the author's own experiences. Is this something that was a part of your reading throughout your academic years in high school or anything?
I actually don't think I read it until I was out of high school.
Okay. Do you know when it was written or anything?
I don't know.
Was it written when you were already in school and everything?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So two things about this. First, like I said, in researching it was the first time that I've ever heard of this book. But now I know what book that I'm adding to the queue next. And secondly, researching this book, this piece of literature has been the center of many controversial conversations due to the content and the theme of it. I can relate to it being in the area that I'm in now.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about your background and everything. Let's talk about your education first. You completed your studies at Gonzaga University?
Yeah, that's where I got my MBA from. Academics kind of always came easy to me growing up. And then going to school on the reservation is kind of one of those, I was a big fish in a small pond. Okay. And it was kind of a shock going from high school. So like my class was a big class for our school. And I think we had 25 kids graduate.
Okay.
And yeah, and then I had a couple little hiccups. I ended up starting at community college first, which ended up working out better for me. If I would have jumped straight into a university, it would have been a rough transition going from my teachers. They knew me from when I was like in kindergarten all the way through my senior year. And so I went to community college in Spokane for 2 years. I didn't get my associates. I left before that. Then I went to Washington State University, got my bachelor's from there. Yeah. And while I was there, just kind of figure out like, okay, what am I going to do next?
What did you get your bachelor's in?
In business administration and economics.
Okay, awesome. So let me go back a little bit. So I'm surprised, but you said your class was a big class at 25 graduating students?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm going to throw out this number, but I want to say that I had like 120 something in my graduating class. And to us, we thought that was big. You know, moving down here to Texas and everything, and the graduating classes, like, they get like no time on a stage. It's literally walk across the stage because there's like 300 and some people graduating all at this one time. So
So for reference, your class was maybe around 125. That was bigger than my whole high school.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. We're small. It was like so small to the point where like I knew like the elementary kids just from seeing them all the time. And then I came back after college and came back and coached. And like these kids were now high schoolers and I helped coach football. And I'm like, oh, man, I remember all you guys, just tiny little guys going around. They're like, what? You went to school here? And then they went and found like the trophy cases and stuff looking like, oh, there's coach right there. Look.
That's cool. Hey, I kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier, but, you know, the school's that small, a little bit more intimate and everything. On my high school diploma, my name is Chico. Of course, that's not my real name, but everybody knows everybody by their nickname. And so, like, on my high school diploma, it says Chico Reyes. So I actually had to get it amended to get my first name put on it because it just seemed like a made-up thing when I would submit it, you know, to on applications and everything. So... So job wise, what is your current occupation? And give us hey, is that your goat?
Yeah, you can hear my goats. They're all going nuts right now.
That's awesome. So what is your current occupation and give us a brief description on your roles and responsibilities.
All right. So I'm the finance director for the Spokane Indian Housing Authority. So I oversee all the finances for the Housing Authority, all the grants that we have, you know, all of payroll, any checks being cut, any future projects, whether we want to build new homes or buy homes, kind of working through all that stuff, kind of in sync with our executive director and our management team.
Wow, that's a lot of responsibility there.
Yeah.
Well, it definitely looks and sounds like you're doing a great job at it, so keep that up.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a challenge initially because, with anything with Indian country, it's a lot of institutional knowledge, not a whole lot of stuff written down. And so once those people leave, they take the knowledge with them. And within the finance department, I'm the longest tenured employee, and I started in July of 2020.
Oh, wow.
It's like everyone left. So it was like they were super awesome, super knowledgeable, but they took that knowledge with them. So it was kind of like fixing the car as we're going.
Yeah.
And, you know, we finally kind of got everything pieced together, and now we're in a really good spot.
Well, that's good. As a family man, well, you kind of said this already, but you're having a son in October. So, again, congratulations.
Thank you.
As a father with a full-time occupation, how do you balance work and your family obligations and still incorporate running?
Yeah, so it's super challenging. I got the baby boy on the way. Then I have a 3-year-old girl and a 4-year-old girl. And then I also have a stepdaughter who's turning 13 this coming weekend. Yeah, so it's a full house. And then that, it's challenging. Definitely got to make a lot of sacrifices. So like with my work schedule, I got to be at work at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
So I don't get to see any of the kids before leaving for work. But then at the end of the day, I pick up the kids and then bring them home and everything. And then I'm on a 4-10s. So then like Fridays are kind of like dad's day with the kids.
Oh, awesome.
To kind of try and make up for some of that lost time. And then to fit running in, the only times I can do it are like my lunch breaks at work or when the kids are asleep, whether that's doing a night run or early in the morning before everyone wakes up. And so that's the way I kind of have to do it. Sometimes, well, right now it's too hot, but I got the jogging stroller, throw both the girls in the jogging stroller.
Yeah.
Obviously we can't go on like a 30-mile trail run, but you know, we could knock out 5 or 6 miles on the road.
Yeah.
And, they're my little cheerleaders. You know, they're usually yelling at me when we're going up a hill to go faster, trying to do my best. And now that they're getting older. Yeah. Now it's like pushing like 80 pounds.
Ooh.
And they still think, you know, they're like 20, 30 pounds each.
Yeah.
And, but that's kind of what you got to do as a, you know, it's a full-time job and as a parent.
Oh, yeah. So we're going to move into a section here, and I'm going to name this Interesting Danny Facts. So when I was researching you, I've come across some great pictures and videos, and I think
these
warrant a backstory. So I'm going to bring up a blast from the past, and you're going to entertain us with the backstory.
All right.
So how old were you in 2011?
2011, I would have been 19.
Okay. So on the YouTube channel, Joken2533, you were challenged to eat 25 IHOP pancakes. How did this come about? And give us your experience with this.
Oh, man. It originally started, so I have two buddies, Jordan and Kennedy. That's they came with Joken. They started doing videos.
Okay.
And, I had one of my aunties calling me out because I don't know. I was just, you know, like young teenage boy that could just eat up everything.
Yeah.
And she told me she'd give me $1 for every pancake I could eat. And she's like, I bet you can't eat 25 pancakes. And I'm like, all right, it's on. So like I told my buddies, I'm like, let's go.
Yeah.
And of course, when I choose to go, it wasn't all you could eat pancakes. So the bill ended up being more than $25, but I'm just too competitive anyway. So we sit down there in the IHOP, they have their camera and everything going and I'm powering through, man. It's, you know, it was kind of similar to ultra running. Started out too fast, you know, had that adrenaline going, started out way too fast, kind of there in the middle. It's like, okay, this is going to be a long one. This is a chore. Then by the end of it, man, I was just hating every bite. I was just so miserable. And then, it was really deceiving because we filmed it kind of like in the evening, like this time. So by the time the video is done, it's all dark outside. So it looks like it took me like all day, but it didn't. And so they're just giving me like, there's no emotional support. They're just like ragging on me the whole time, giving me such a hard time. Yeah. Then I finally got through it and finished those pancakes. And then My auntie, she did pay up too. She did.
That's awesome. So when I was watching the video, twice an ambulance rolls by.
Yeah.
And the first time, like, I thought it was for you.
Because the camera follows it. Yeah.
So the second time, you guys were like, I wonder if he's lost. But so after I found out you guys were at IHOP, I went to Fact Secret website. And this gives you the nutrition facts of the food that we eat. So I went to IHOP pancakes. You ate 25 pancakes. I did not put in the syrup or don't know if you ate the butter. But carbs, 57 carbs per pancake times 25, 1,425. Protein, which is on a good side, 12 grams of protein per pancake, which comes out to 300 grams. Total calories, 155 per pancake.
Ooh.
3,875 calories.
Yeah, that's why I did it when I was 19.
There you go. All right, let's move on to this next one. Through the short time that we've known each other and through our past conversations, I've learned that you're not really big into music. However, through my research, I'm convinced otherwise. That being said, what is Tone Deaf Tuesday?
Oh, man. So, like, yeah, it's just something I started on my Instagram page that, that's a deep dive going back to next. I haven't done that in years. I cannot sing at all. And I own up to that. I got a terrible voice. And so, yeah. And some of the songs that kind of just hit the most, they're not the most manly songs. So I'm like, all right, no, this is a good song. I'm not going to discriminate. And so, yeah, I'd just sing my heart out in my car, whether it was to or from work. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, like this is funny. Like I'll go ahead and share this. I know a couple people will think it's funny too. You know, I'm not too proud to make fun of myself. And so man, I don't even remember how many of those are out there, but there's a few.
Well, you said you haven't done it in a long time. So I'm going to give you the opportunity. Give us a taste of Tone Deaf Tuesday, and I'll give you a choice between either singing the Pokemon theme song or Jukebox Hero, which is the favorite video of mine that I saw.
Oh, man. I almost feel like I got nerves at the starting line of an ultra right now. Yeah, I'll pick the Pokemon theme song that's near and dear to my heart. Okay. I want to eat the very best the one ever was. Freedom is my cause. Catch them all. My best friend, world's best friend. Gotta catch them all. Now all my dogs are up here. They're all worried about me.
Oh, that's great, man. Good job. So I am going to say that Tone Deaf Tuesdays is something that you should bring back. I enjoy it. I'm sure the audience will enjoy it. And it'll be something we can find some common ground on.
All right.
Along with the music theme, also you have a connection with a notable musician whom is the lead vocalist and rhythm guitarist for the band Alter Bridge. Fill us in with these details.
Yeah, so that's Miles Kennedy. He's my mom's first cousin.
So a bit of background information on Miles Kennedy for those who aren't familiar with his work. He's released 6 studio albums with the rock band Alter Bridge. He filled in for Axl Rose when he refused to show up for the Guns N' Roses Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. And he also serves as the vocalist and songwriter for Slash's solo ventures, which is now called Slash featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators. Man, that is awesome. And I've been listening to Miles Kennedy for quite a while. But so I like his music, and I always have. And to make this connection, that is pretty cool.
That yeah, that's a I'm really bummed out looking back at it. Like when I was a kid, he's played in Spokane multiple times, but I remember there was one time when I was a kid, he was playing and like all the family was coming so we could all hang out with Miles. And I was a little kid. I didn't understand it. Like I said, I wasn't into music at all. So I'm just like, whatever, you guys all go. So they all got to hang out with Miles and I just stayed back doing whatever. And then once I got older and then funny, just different friends I met over the years, they knew of Alter Bridge and Miles and they were big fans. So we went and saw them in Spokane.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh yeah, man, let's just hang out until the show starts shutting down. It's like, oh yeah, there's my Uncle Butch. I'm like, yeah. Like I'll just get Uncle Butch's attention. Then we'll get to go backstage. And so we were hanging out, and he was up in the balcony and I'm like, oh, come on, uncle. Like, look at me. Yeah. And then security escorted us out.
Oh,
and it was like, oh man. And then, I was just recently talking to my sister about that and telling her, cause she's a big fan. She got to meet him.
Yeah.
And then, I don't even know why it crossed my mind. She's like, well, why didn't you tell like grandma and grandpa? They would have made one phone call and you would have got to hang out with him.
Yeah.
So I'm like, wow. I didn't even think about that. So that's for next time.
Yeah, definitely, man. Hey, so that being said, do you have a favorite Miles Kennedy song, regardless of which band he is performing with?
I don't have a favorite, but one favorite, but like anything that he's done with Slash, I just love.
Definitely. Personally, I'm in the same boat with that one. Personally, for me, I like the song We Will Roam, and that is on Slash's, I think, second album, which is Apocalyptic Love. Man, that is one of my favorite songs of all time with that duo right there. But let's break contact with Danny the Manly and let's converse with Danny the Athlete. Whoa, time out. Before we continue, it's notable to mention that Danny puts his education to work in the running world as the treasurer for Renew Earth Running. His two-year term started in December of 21 and he works closely with the founder, Mr. Michael Harrelson. You have our continued support. Keep up the great work. And now give us your Instagram handle so we can follow and support you. Time in.
Yeah, it's Brigdand. It's a combination of my last name and first name. Brigdan.
Hey, your Instagram has such a wide variety of content, and it shows all of your personalities from dad to Batman. Okay, Danny, bring us back in time. Start at the beginning and give us the complete story of how you started your running journey, why you continue to run, and what is the engine that is powering your motivation?
I never considered myself a runner growing up. I was a football player. I love football. Something me and my dad bonded with early. So yeah, especially going through like high school, you know, I would have been interested in cross country, but it's at the same time as football. So I'm like, nope, I'm fully devoted. I'm not going to do that. And, but for springtime, I'm like, hey, I remember in junior high, I'm like, hey, let me try this track thing out. Kind of enjoyed it. Never really found my niche, whichever event. And then when I got into high school doing more track, you know, I just loved my coach Switek. She really saw something in me initially that I didn't see. And, she really pushed me initially. It's funny looking back. Initially, I was kind of just a body on the team. Cause if you imagine how small our school was,
Matt,
our track team was even smaller. Wow. So we would go to these meets and there'd be, for us, there was like be a team of like 30, 40, 50 kids. And they're just like massive. And we'd have like five. We'd have like 5 to 10.
Yeah.
And so like with track, you know, for team points, it's like, hey, there's only 3 people signed up for the 3 mile. Danny, get in there. We need a body. We need the points. Everyone else would talk smack to the coach or, you know, wouldn't do it. But I'm just like really coachable. So I'm like, yeah, coach, if you want me to do it, I'll do it. So I do the 2 mile and I'd get lapped by the whole field, boys and girls. Yeah, so that's kind of my early track. And then I kind of found my niche in the 4x400 relay. Went to state 2 years in that. And but I was still a body in the 2 mile, you know, kind of getting lapped by people. And it was funny looking back to there was one of the meets. I wasn't supposed to do the 2 mile. I was like coming off of a flu or a cold or something. And last minute, my coach told me, hey, Danny, like I put your name in, you're doing the 2 mile today. And I'm like, no. She's like, nope, it's starting in 5. Like, get ready.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ah. And I was like mad because like I didn't feel good, wasn't supposed to do it, but I was super hungry. So I had one of my friends go over to concessions. I'm like, hey man, here's a couple bucks. Go buy me a Snickers and wait by the track. And he's like, but Danny, you're about to run. I'm like, I know, and I'm hungry. Like, I need to eat. I'm like, just stand there at that corner and be ready. And so, yeah, the race starts and there he is. So as we're starting the 2 mile, I snatch that Snickers from him, you know, peel down the wrapper, take a bite. And I see all my buddies inside the track, you know, and they're kind of laughing, doing whatever. Come around the start finish line for my first lap. I kind of try and hide it in my hand from my coach so I don't get yelled at. Then come back around and I actually drop the Snickers trying to get another bite. One of my teammates who wasn't running goes and finds it and has it ready for me when I come back through. And so I'm chowing down the Snickers. A friend from another school is like, got some water for you to wash it down. I'm like, no, I'm good. Next lap, I got cotton mouth. It's miserable. And he was nowhere to be seen with the water. Then I can't remember how many laps it was in, but there was this one guy who's one of my really good friends now. At the time, we're kind of just acquaintances. His name is Matt. He was one of the ones, he'd finished third in the 2 mile, but every meet he had two guys on his own team that would beat him. So he was super fast, but he never got to go to state because there'd be top two out of districts and his two teammates would go ahead of him. And so like, he wasn't ever going to beat those guys. So one of the times he's lapping me, I'm like, hey man, take a bite. Come on, man. It's right here. And he's like, what? No. I'm like, you're not going to beat him anyway. Come on, man. Have a bite with me. And he wouldn't do it. And so I'd give him a hard time about it. I finished the race. And then, of course, my coach, she found out, people were talking. But it was kind of one of those, like, I was in trouble just so the rest of the team could see I was in trouble, but I was not really in trouble.
Yeah.
Just like, yeah, Danny did this, but you guys don't do it. So that was kind of like my long distance stuff. It wasn't ever anything serious.
Yeah.
I'm just like, yeah, you know, I'm not good enough. I'm not a real runner. Cause yeah, the 4x400 was kind of just my thing.
Yeah.
And then, after high school, I didn't run at all. I had some opportunities to play some football at small schools. I kind of did the small town thing and I kind of picked my school based on who I was dating. And obviously, you know, that didn't work out, but it led me on this path. So like in the big picture, it worked out, but yeah. So then, I didn't do anything athletic wise, no running, nothing for a few years.
Yeah.
And then it might've been, so I graduated in 2010. I was talking with my dad for whatever reason. I can't remember how we got on the topic of it. There's this local race. It's a 12K. It's called Bloomsday. It's pretty big here in Spokane. Like they shut down like a majority of downtown for you to run through. And my dad, I remember him doing it every year I was alive. We'd go in the news and look and see if we could find them. Never could because there's thousands of people running it.
Yeah.
And it was kind of one of those things. I never really understood why. And it was like, man, you get up so early because we live like an hour and a half away. And I never really understood them. For whatever reason, one day he explained it to me that when he was becoming sober, when he was going through AA, he had to list out goals. And one of his goals was to get in shape to run that race Bloomsday and to do it every year that he was sober. And so that's why he would do it. And like once he shared that with me, like I've never drank. I had a couple sips back when I was young, but I've never had anything more than that. I've just seen how bad it is on both sides of my family. So I'm like, I just never messed with it. And once he shared that with me, I'm like, yeah, you know, like let's make this a thing. Like, you know, I'm sober too. Let's both run this together. And so that's kind of what got me back into running. But those first few years were rough. I was like any like young kid where just roll out of bed and expect to do something. And I was able to get away with that a couple times. There was one time where, man, I really struggled. Like I couldn't run the whole thing. And my dad, he's 32 years older than me. He looks even older because he has like snow white hair, the long braid. The race photographers got some pictures and my friends turned it into memes about me, like my dad like talking smack to me. That's what it looked like. He just looks real stoic and serious and I'm walking. God, man, I can't keep doing this. Like I need to start doing more. I can't roll out of bed anymore and like run over 7 miles. You know, I kind of tried doing a little bit more here and there. And then it wasn't really until I graduated college and came back to work with my tribe. There was a small workout group that on lunch breaks, they'd go meet up, do whatever workout. I eventually started working out with them. And one of the guys, Randy Bowen, he's like, hey man, there's this half marathon. Like we should all sign up and do it. And I'm like, holy cow, a half marathon? No way, man, I can't do it. And he's like, oh no, this is all along the river. It's flat. He's like, you actually lose elevation.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, maybe I can. And he's like, yeah, let's all do it. Let's all do it. So I'm like, okay. And so I kind of trained for it. My goal time was like 2 hours and I got like hour 59 minutes and something seconds. So I was pumped and I was kind of hooked from there. I'm like, all right, that was awesome. So then the next year I go to do that same race, but to do the full marathon. And I'm like, oh, heck yeah, let's do this. And I was hitting my training really hard. It was a mistake. in training wise, but I don't regret it. My cousin Will, he also plays semi-pro football for the Spokane Wolfpack, and he convinced me to try out for the team. He's like, hey man, let's play together. Yeah. And so I'm like, all right man, yeah, let's give this a shot, just like the good old days. And so like I got on the team, and our first game was the day before my marathon.
Oh man.
Yeah. And so that was kind of the thing of like, man, like my big goal is the marathon, so I'm not gonna drop that, you know, and I already paid for it. For once I was kind of thankful that I rode the bench a lot, that I didn't get a lot of playing time. Like I wasn't trying to hide out, but I wasn't like super vocal of like, all right, put me in, coach. I'm like, all right, if he puts me in, he puts me in. But if he doesn't, I'm not using up this energy and this heat. So, all right, this is good. Also, my training kind of fell off because that's when my my first daughter, Aspen, was born. She was born in March and the race was in May. And so that was my first real change on trying to adjust being a parent and training. Oh. And so my training took a hit the first half of the marathon. Felt great. I was cruising. I was on like my goal pace. Like that first half, I was like an hour 45, I think. Wow. And so I'm like, oh yeah, hell yeah, we got this. This is awesome. And then it was like, then the rest of the race happened. Miles like 18 or 19, the wheels just fell off. Everything hurt. Right there. Like, and that's like, especially if I would have known everything about like fueling and the nutrition and everything else, man, like I was just so green. And so, yeah, I ended up finishing over 4 hours. It was, so like that second part, it really dragged on and I just felt miserable. And that kind of scared me and made me take a step back. Like instead of keeping advancing, I'm like, hey man, that was miserable. I'm not a marathon runner. I'm a half marathon runner. Like that's all I can do. I'm like, maybe 25K. Like I can do some 25Ks.
So let me ask you this real quick before we move too far away from it. How long did you play semi-pro? What position did you play?
I only played that 1 year, kind of check off the box. I could have played more, but I live an hour and a half away. So I'd have to drive an hour and a half, go to practice. We practice once a week and then drive an hour and a half back home. And then game day, the closest team to us, if we had an away game, was like Tri-Cities, probably Tri-Cities or Wenatchee, and both of those places are like three to four hours away. And so and it's all summertime, so all your prime weekends that like you want to go spend with family, go to the water, do whatever, we had football games. And so that made it tough. If I lived in Spokane, you know, I might have played a couple more years, but it was I'm like, man, like I'm too old to put my body on the line, like if you're not going to do it too. So like,
well, I saw that you had some baller ass cleats though.
Yeah. That was one thing. It was, you know, I always felt like back in high school playing football too, like the Deion Sanders thing, like look good, feel good, play good.
Yeah. Do you still have them?
Yeah, I actually do. I still don't have them down in the closet. I was cleaning them out the other day and I was taking a look at them like, oh man, I wish I just had an excuse to put these on. And then when I was coaching football, I actually had one of the kids on the team like ask if they could have them. And they got too much sentimental value. I'm like, no, I can't just give these away.
I hear you. Okay, so let me ask you this question. The red handprint across the face became a notable symbol across Indigenous communities nationwide in support of missing and murdered Indigenous women, aka MMIW. You have participated in many running events with this symbol. Can you speak to the significance of the symbol and your reasoning for unconditionally supporting it?
Yeah. So the significance with it, you know, it symbolizes the women going missing and murdered and being silenced. And then the red hand, the red is supposed to be a color that the spirits can see. And so that's why the color red. And for me, it's one of those things, you know, being Native, we know our challenges, but, you know, we also have benefits in the society being men, a lot of them that we don't realize. And that's something that, you know, I try as hard as I can to not take for granted. And, you know, it's different little things like, you know, I mentioned running at night or in the morning. I never have to worry if I'm running and there's a car coming by me that they're going to snatch me up or something like that. Never crosses my mind. I'm never out on a city trail worried about, hey, is that guy trying to size me up or, you know, someone trying to snatch me. I never have to really worry about where I'm running. And that's something I take for granted a lot that, you know, women, that they kind of have to be on the lookout for those things. And so it's kind of that kind of really touched me. I'm like, hey, like, what can I kind of do to show support? And MMIW kind of really started, the awareness kind of started happening more in Indian country, but not a whole lot outside. And I wasn't seeing a whole lot happening in our area. And so I kind of thought about like, hey, you know, I've seen some other runners, like Rosalie Fish from the Muckleshoot tribe. I was at that track meet where she had the MMIW hand and the MMIW on her leg. That's some of the kids that I coached in football. They were running track in that state meet. And so I was there when that happened and I'm like, like that's awesome. That brought so much awareness. Like I want to do something like that. And so first I kind of reached out to some of different friends and female cousins, like, hey, like, I don't want to like overstep, like, is this okay? Like if I were to go ahead and do it, to kind of break that barrier to, hey, because I feel like with these movements, you kind of need to break down those barriers to kind of get out of, for better or worse term, kind of like the echo chamber of like you and I having a conversation about like, we both know, but we need to get beyond that and educate those that don't know. And so it's like, hey, if I can break down that barrier, that gender barrier, like, are you okay with that? And they were supportive. And then kind of an added component to it, my daughters, it's their aunt, Cammie Bird. She was murdered in Las Vegas and that remains unsolved. And so that really struck close to home. My girls were never able to meet her. And so kind of with all that culminating together, it's like, hey, like I want to do something. And so that's when I started running with the MMIW red hand across my face. You know, I've been able to have some good conversations with non-native runners. Obviously, sometimes you get the ones where they just think it's war paint or something cool and they try and make a joke. And so it's kind of like, okay, like you're ignorant, but it's not your fault. You just have no clue, whatever. Just you go be you. But I really value the different runners that are like, hey, what's that about? And it's like, okay, let's run together and I'll explain to you what's going on, kind of tell you everything. And, you know, and that's what it's about is to get beyond, you know, that racial barrier and to kind of get that out there. And so that's kind of what I was trying to do with that.
Right. Hey, and you're definitely supporting this great cause and raising awareness. So thank you. I know I appreciate it. And I think the rest of the indigenous communities and anybody affected by this appreciates it as well. So on behalf of them, thank you. In June of 2021, the world learned about the 215 indigenous children's remains found buried at the Kamloops Indian Residential School in Canada. In honor of the children and to raise awareness, you organize a 215-mile relay run. Can you walk us through the details of this event?
Yeah, so I have family that are still in Kamloops. That was really hard for them up there when that came out. And then my grandmother, Alvina, she went through the boarding school system here in the U.S. And I had family that went to that Kamloops Residential School. And so that hit really close to home. And I started seeing people running 2.15 miles to kind of help raise awareness. And I'm like, hey, you know, kind of one of those other things, I want to do something too. Like, you know, I kind of want to do something to help raise awareness and kind of try and help heal family up there. Like, let me try and do something. And, you know, I mentioned a half marathon, 25K was my limit. But then I kind of actually started looking like, hey, man, can I run 215 miles? Like, can I just run somewhere and like set up camp? I started doing all the logistics. I'm like, man, like I'm gonna have to take a lot of time off work. I can't afford to miss work that much. So, like, that's not going to work. So I'm like, okay, what if I can just get like a couple friends? Can I just get a couple friends to run with me? And we just have a shuttle and we kind of just knock this thing out.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. And then I figured out the route starting at, in Wellpinit, Washington, on the Spokane Indian Reservation at our administrative building. And I wanted to run through several non-native communities. So I'm like, hey, these are the ones that need to know. We all know. We know about boarding schools and that there's unmarked graves, but we need these non-native communities to know. So I want to touch these different non-native communities. And then I wanted to finish on the Colville Indian Reservation in Espelum, Washington, at their administrative building. And so I mapped that all out. I think it started out on Facebook. It was a combination of Facebook and Instagram. I was just like, hey, if I can get like three or four other runners, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
It worked out, but the date, I only ended up giving myself like 2 weeks to plan this thing because I already had races scheduled. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, I got a race this weekend, then I got a race this weekend. I don't have anything in between. So let me hit that weekend. And I kind of wanted to strike while the iron was hot, because with how society is, like, something might be the hot topic, and then, you know, 2-3 weeks later, they move on to the next thing. So I'm like, hey, let's do this while people are talking about it. But yeah, so I posted it, and I was just overwhelmed with all the support. I had so many people that were, they wanted to run, or they weren't runners, but they wanted to figure out how to help. So then I had to really figure out how to get this organized. We ended up with, I think, a little over 30 runners, two support vehicles. We had 3 different shifts of drivers, and a bunch of other volunteers. It was so awesome to see the support. We ended up having, I'm going to forget, but we had Spokane Tribe represented, Colville Tribe. We had a Hopi runner. We had a Nimiipuu. I think we had a Navajo. Then we had a Latino. We had white. We had a Native New Zealander. Wow. You know, then we had me and my dad and my sister, who are all duly enrolled up at Kamloops. So you had that representation as well. So you had everyone coming together to help support this. And it was awesome.
That's great. You mentioned in today's society that, you know, we hear and care about for something for so long, and then, you know, we move on to the next thing. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that is called care fatigue. It's just where something is in the news feed so long that you just kind of, you see it so much and you just kind of stop caring about it. But I think you definitely did strike while the iron's hot, because you really did raise a lot of awareness for that. And it looks like you had a great outcome.
Yeah, it's super awesome. But a few of the other runners said it, but you could kind of feel them with you, whether it was the 215 or if it was, you know, an ancestor of my own that went through that. Yeah, you could feel them with you, and you could feel like their appreciation. And my dad, he's not a touchy person, and that's how he is. But then once I was coming in, man, I gave him a big old hug. That's and, cool. You know, he hugged me right back. And yeah, I just lost, like, had all the emotions hit me. And it was powerful.
Heck yeah, that's cool. Well, if it does happen again next year, be sure to keep us in the loop and everything, and we'll see how we can help out.
Definitely.
Hey, so you operate these running events through your organization, which in your native tongue translates to "We Will Run"?
Yeah. Nem Ke Huatip.
Okay. Yeah, I did not want to attempt to say that, just looking at the spelling. But yeah, thank you for saying that for me. Hey, so you can also add race director to your resume, because you held the race on the reservation on Orange Shirt Day, and it finishes near Fort Spokane, which was an old boarding school site.
Yep, that's correct.
What is Orange Shirt Day, and what was the outcome of your event, and is it an annual event?
Yeah, so Orange Shirt Day, the story kind of behind that was there was a person who was getting taken to go to boarding school, to residential school. She had a brand new orange shirt that she was proud to wear, kind of trying to take that mindset of, like, that it was going to be a good thing. And then when she got there, they took her orange shirt from her and they put her in a uniform and kind of stripped her of that. And then, you know, like, we're familiar with the atrocities that happened in the boarding school systems, residential school systems. And so Orange Shirt Day is a day of remembrance and honoring the people who had to go through that. And since she couldn't wear orange that day, we all wear orange in honor of her and in honor of everyone who had to go through those systems.
Right. That is awesome. Is this going to be an annual event for you?
I'm planning on it. Unfortunately, this year I couldn't do it, because that's right around the due date for my baby. And just to kind of keep everything happy at home, I'm like, put a pause on this, not do it this year. And so it's like, as much as I wanted to, I knew, I'm like, no, let's pause this for this year and then do it again next year.
Well, Danny, all of these are amazing acts to put into motion. So on behalf of the Indigenous community, allow me to thank you for representing us in a positive light. You know, you have our support on all of these ventures, so keep that momentum going. Let's get into your personal running expeditions. So as a runner, I've noticed that you're a go big or go home personality. Your ultra run sign up profile shows 4 events, Number one, a 26K, which is 16 miles. And that was Race the Wolf. A 50-miler, which was Ancient Lakes. And I'm presuming that was the qualifier for this next race, which was the Crazy Mountain 100. So before we get into these, quickly walk us through Race the Wolf, Ancient Lakes, and then we'll speak about the Crazy Mountain 100.
Yeah, so Race the Wolf, I didn't know it at the time, but it's a really good introduction of what ultra running is and what power hiking is. I did trail races like before, but it was still like everything was, it was like 95% like runnable. Even if there was like rocks in the ground and stuff, it wasn't ever climbs that were like ridiculous. That race was the weekend after the 215-mile relay.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so I had some friends. They were like, hey, Danny, like you're going to be an awesome trail runner. We want to get you off of the roads and onto the trails more. Like,
yeah.
And so they kind of, they signed me up for this race. Like, hey, we got you. Don't worry about it. Like, we're going to do this race. We want you to do it. You're going to do awesome. And I think if I would have went into it, like knowing like Crazy Mountain 100 and what these ultra runs are, like I would have enjoyed that race so much more. But I went into it like, oh yeah, like, you know, you don't walk during a race. If you walk, it's because you're out of shape. Like that was my mindset going into it. And so this is all like on Schweitzer Mountain. I'm not even sure the elevation, but it's like a ski resort.
Yeah.
And you start out and it's runnable, but then you're straight up hiking up like ski slopes.
When I saw the video, I thought you were at Run the Rut at first. I thought it was the Big Sky Resort for some reason. But and then we start going through the video a lot more. And where it shows you running, you're running pretty strong. I don't know where in mileage-wise that was, but the country in the back was just beautiful.
Yeah, the views were amazing there. And,
is that Idaho?
What's that? Is that yeah, in Idaho.
Okay. I have your finish time for this one at 4 hours and 39 minutes. But just a weekend before that, you ran the 215-mile relay. So
yeah,
that's awesome. Talk to us about the Ancient Lakes 50-miler.
Yeah, so Ancient Lakes 50, that was that Race the Wolf was a good introduction to ultra, even though it wasn't an ultra distance.
Hold on. Is this 50-miler your first ultra distance? Oh, my
yeah.
God. All right, continue. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, no, it's all good. So kind of backtrack for a second of like why I signed up for it. Actually, it was you that convinced me to sign up for the Crazy Mountain 100. And in order to do that race, I needed a 50-mile qualifier.
Yeah.
And so I was searching around for one. I wanted it to, you know, because Crazy Mountain was in July. So yeah. Okay, I need something springtime. And I kind of stumbled upon Ancient Lakes 50-miler.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, let's give this a go and figure it out. And so signed up for that one. Thankfully, my buddy Matt, the one who wouldn't eat the Snickers, he lived like a 45 minutes away. Oh, so he let me stay the night because it was like a thing that would have been like a 4-hour drive for me. Typically, I have to, for most of the runs that I would do, I would have to drive like the morning of the race, run the race. Yeah. And as soon as it's over, turn around, drive back home to be with the kids.
Yeah.
And so I was thankful for that one. He let me stay at his place, went and ran that. I didn't think I'd like the course. It was a cloverleaf style. So you run this 1 6-mile loop, come back to the start finish line, then you run a separate like 8-mile loop or whatever it was. And then you run like a, I don't know if it's a 10-mile loop and back to the start finish. And so that's like one lap and you have to do 3 laps.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't think I'd like that because I'm like, man, that makes it so easy to quit because you're always back at the finish line.
Yeah.
So like, you know, you could be partway through and be like, well, my car is right there. I'm done. I ended up enjoying it because it was like, you knew the course and you knew what was up ahead. You knew if you had like a tough stretch of, hey, this next loop is the tough one. But even with that, you know, the elevation gain wasn't anything crazy. Nothing like the Crazy Mountains. This race, it was perfect learning experience. I did everything you're not supposed to do. So my plan was 12-minute miles. I start out doing 10-minute miles because the adrenaline, everyone's there. Like,
yep.
You know, I probably lost track of my fueling. Didn't quite stay on top of that. Finishing that second lap. So I was probably like 33 miles in. That's where I hit the wall.
Oh.
I was really struggling. I was still pretty certain I was going to beat the cutoff time, but I was not enjoying myself. I remember thinking then like, man, I can't do the Crazy Mountain 100. I can't even do this 50 miler.
you know, it's getting to that dark place of just like continuously like doubting yourself and just like, man, I was so stupid for thinking I could do 12 minute miles this whole time. Thankfully, that's when you could have a pacer. My buddy Matt was going to show up be my pacer. But he took a little bit longer, so I had to start that last lap without him. And then, of course, he's trying to be helpful and run out there and meet me on the course, but he didn't know it. So he ended up running a bunch of extra miles trying to find me. And then I get back to the start finish, finishing the first loop. And then he ends up running back and finds me. Yes. Then he already ran like 4 miles. But he was good spirits, exactly what I needed. You know, he was keeping on like my hydration and my fueling, you know, telling stories, keeping me moving. Yeah. And those next, that next stretch of miles, I was running like I was at the beginning of the race. He really pulled me back out.
Well, that's good. And you got the finish on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, it was funny headed into that last loop. He was like, hey man, like, I don't think I could run that whole loop with you because of the extra miles he added on.
Yeah.
He's like, but what I'm going to do, I forgot to get a Snickers for you. I'm going to go into town and go buy you a Snickers and I'll come back and run with you. So then I can give you the Snickers. We can finally share one on a race together after all these years. And he showed up at a perfect stretch. There was a steep climb coming back up from river.
Yeah.
And then that's exactly what I needed. Then he helped get me through that finish line.
Well, heck yeah, that's awesome. And that qualified you to run this next one, the Crazy Mountain 100. So let's start off with race morning and meeting at the starting line. Well, first off, the appreciation for the indigenous community was simply amazing on in this run. But so I rode the bus from camp to the starting line, and I believe Phyllis and Michael were on our bus as well. But we were loading up, and as people were filing in, I was just sitting in my seat, and then I see people eating breakfast, and I'm like, oh man, I was so caught up in the moment that I totally just forgot to eat.
Yeah.
So I was just like, all right, it is what it is. I just got to roll with it like this. But when we arrived at the starting line, all of the indigenous runners, we started to gather, and then we were like, hey, where's Danny? And then we were looking, it's like, hey, there he is. We literally walked over to you, like, hey, you ready? And you're like, yeah. And we met your father and Will. What's your dad's name again?
Ron.
Hey, Ron. So we were just like that quick. We picked you up, took a picture. Then they started the prayer song and it was go. Like within 5 minutes, we were running. And man, from the go time to the first aid station, I think we were kind of all just a little bit too leery of going out too fast. But the first aid station was Porcupine, and it was literally just some jugs of water and some food just like sitting right there on the trail with a couple of volunteers and everything. I know I took for granted up to this point the 21 and a half minute mile threshold. I was just like, oh, we got time. This is definitely time where we could have banked some extra time. How did you feel for that first 6 miles from the start to the Porcupine aid station?
Going off of what I learned from Ancient Lakes, you know, I'm like, I don't want to start out too fast. And so my game plan was when it's runnable, run 15 minute miles. I run a 15 minute mile, I'm banking 6 minutes. And I thought that would be more than enough to bank, because I'm like, hey, when I went in trying to do 12 minute miles, I was way too fast. 15 is manageable. I can do that. And then when we started out running together, we were running a little bit faster than that. And so like, I was actually getting worried that I was going too fast. Like in hindsight, like, yeah, we probably should have picked up the pace. Yeah. But like in the moment, I'm like, man, I think I'm coming out too hot, just a little bit too hot. Hopefully don't end up paying for this. Yeah. Then yeah, going into Porcupine there, man, I felt great. Like looking back, I think I could have just blew through that aid station and I would have been fine. Like, cause I still had plenty of water on me. I kind of topped off, and then we had those, water filter bottles to fill up in the creeks. So like, yeah, definitely hindsight. I think I could have just blew through that to save more, bank more time and just keep going.
From Porcupine to Ibex, I want to say is like around 13 miles. And this was the section that was my most favorite part of the whole Crazy Mountain experience. This is when all of us indigenous runners were running in one line together. And like, man, it was just, it was awesome. And this is where we kept Jason Cummings at the front. Whoa, timeout number two. Hey, before we continue, I want to give a shout out to all the indigenous athletes that showed up to the Crazy Mountain 100. Phyllis, Scott, Levi, Jason, Eric, Michael, Brocade, and if there's anybody else that I have missed, I definitely apologize, but just know that I love you and thank you for showing up and representing the Indigenous running community and Hyman. And Chris is like, hey, if you guys want to pass, go ahead. And we're like, no, no, you're doing great. Stay up there. But yeah, like I love that section. And like we were talking so much, and I don't know if we got into like story time or what it was, but I was just like, hey, did we lose Danny? And then you're like, hey, no, I'm right here. I've been up behind you the whole time.
Yeah, and I was just like fly on the wall, listen to everything. And you're like, hey, man, I've been running with this guy, Danny. Anyone see him? I haven't seen him since the aid station. I'm like, yeah, no, Chico, I'm right behind you, man. Like, we're good.
Oh, man. But yeah, once we got to Ibex is when I finally got to meet up with my crew for the first time that day. And I finally got to eat. How did you feel up to that point? Because I know you kind of started pulling away a little bit at that time.
I actually ate breakfast. We camped on like the side of the road that night before, and Will, he got this little propane grill. So he cooked us breakfast. So yeah, man, I was feeling good headed into that. But yeah, getting into Ibex, when we were coming in, you guys stopped at that creek to fill up some water. And I want to say that was like 2-3 miles before Ibex. And I remember thinking, oh, man, I'm not going to stop. Like, I still got plenty of water on me. I'm going to use this time at the aid station with those guys. And so that's kind of when I initially pulled away. Yeah, coming in there, man, I felt great. My pacer, Tim, I met him through Megan, and he was actually volunteering at that aid station, kind of helping. He was the one pointing us in to go into Ibex, like, hey, run down here. Okay. And so he was standing there. He's like, hey, man, like, you're doing great. Like, you're doing awesome. You're doing the perfect pace. Yeah. He's like, I almost thought I was going to have to make you slow down there for a second, but you're doing great. Keep it up. And I'm like, all right, cool, cool. And going to the aid station, yeah, first time seeing my crew. It was awesome. It was my dad and Will's first time ever being at a race, let alone crewing it. Yeah. So thankfully we met up with Tim that night before, and he kind of showed them the ropes on like what a crew is supposed to do, which I thought was helpful because I've never had a crew. I've always done everything solo. And so, yeah, they were super awesome, had everything set up and ready for me to go so they could just get me in and out. I left, I think, right with Levi and Brocade Black Eagle. And that first little stretch out of there, man, they were like mountain goats just hiking up. So I kind of let them pass me.
So once we left Ibex and went to Cow Camp, that was, I think, a little over 12 miles. And this is where the terrain started to get a lot more challenging. What stood out to me during this section right here was I saw a dude lying on the side of the trail in the fetal position throwing up.
Oh, I think I saw the same guy. Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about.
Because we weren't too far apart from each other at that point.
Yeah.
I stopped and I offered help. I'm like, hey, do you need anything? He goes, no, I'm good. Stood up and he had like vomit like sprinkled in his beard. And he goes, it's a part of trail running. I was just like, oh my God. But once we got to Cow Camp, the volunteers at that aid station were amazing. Oh man, I can't tell you. Like, I definitely got a boost of energy from those guys. They were dancing, all the food that we needed. We didn't have to stand up. They grabbed everything out of our packs. I was just like, man, this is awesome and everything.
They were acting like they were your personal crew.
Yeah.
They're taking your vest off. Like, hey, let me top off your water. Let me hold your trekking poles. Yeah. You go sit down, take care of whatever. And it's like, oh man, this is awesome.
Yeah. Heck yeah. That was definitely one of the highlights at the aid station stops for me. But once we left there, it was 11 and a half miles to Half Moon. And that is where I DNF. Going into this, I knew I wasn't 100% recovered from my Achilles surgery earlier this year, but I worked my ass off as safely as I possibly could for this. But that being said, there was no way that I wasn't going to put myself into this race, but at the same time, leave that aid station and put myself or this race into any hazardous situation. But seeing the runners that were at the forefront of the running groups, we were going up these mountains and they were like sprinting down them. And I'm just like, how are you guys doing this? Like, it was amazing to see the amount of athleticism those guys had.
Yeah, like, I didn't really keep track, but there was one guy, I think he was in the lead at the time. he was like legitimate sprinting down. And then I saw him like stick both of his trek poles into the trail and like leapfrog and jump down the trail like 10 feet and just like land and just like keep going. And I'm like, oh man, I'd break both ankles and probably my femur and be rolling down the hill. There's no way. And then, you know, then there's other people right behind him, like, you know, damn near doing the same thing, sprinting down it. And I'm like, oh man, there's no way.
Yeah. You know, what's crazy is like, I did a map recon. I looked at the terrain. I knew what kind of elevation we were going into. And then going to the race and actually experiencing it, I didn't really understand what we were going into like I thought I did. Because now I look at that map and I'm like, oh my God, now look at this. Yeah. You know, I know how to better prepare for next time. It's still going to be a challenge, but it's one that I'm up to.
Yeah, that's definitely like, yeah, I looked at the map. I looked at the elevation charts. For me, it really kind of hit me hitting that first like mountain pass before cow camp when you come running in and it's like a bowl. You have nothing but mountains. And you're like, yeah, where am I going? Like, yeah, there's no path out of here. And then like, there has to be some like old train tunnel cutting straight through this mountain, right? Like,
right.
Because I don't see anything. And then like you get closer and then you see tiny little dots way up there and you're like, oh my God, that's where I'm going. And then you start heading up over here and then you look way over there and you see tiny little dots moving. And you're like, oh my God, yeah, this is what we're doing. And then really, man, that elevation where I'm at here, like I want to say I'm around like 2000 feet elevation and like the highest point I just ran up it. It's, I think, like just under 4,000 feet. And so like, that's what I was using for training. Yeah. It was the weirdest thing, especially being at elevation and then going up that, yeah, where like, I didn't get elevation sick, but like the best way I could explain it was like, there was like a governor put on my legs. Like my legs weren't tired, but I just couldn't, yeah, move them any faster. Like I couldn't get enough oxygen to them. Like my heart and my lungs were working overtime. My legs felt good. They just couldn't move faster no matter what I'd try and do. Like they were just stuck in that gear. Yeah. And it was just the weirdest feeling.
I remember when we were on the backside going down into Half Moon, I was behind you. I was actually running up to you and man, my ankle or my Achilles was done. And I scared you when I twisted my ankle and I was out there cussing profanities and everything. And you turned around, you're like, oh shit. And you're like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm good. Wasn't even 10 steps later again. And I was just like, oh man, this leg isn't doing me any good out here. You know, but when I took my DNF, I knew what the answer was when the medic was looking it over. You just have to hear it sometimes. I knew I couldn't continue. Once she said that, it's better that I don't continue. I was like, all right, got it. To make it as far as I did and that be the reason I pull out, I was okay with that. The next morning, my body wasn't sore. Of course, my ankle was hurt and everything. That's a given. But the muscles themselves were not sore. And so I think that's a plus, something in the right direction with the training that I was doing up to that point. I used a lot of, incorporated a lot of weight training and kettlebells. Of course, Stairmaster because of where I live. But I truly think that is something I'm going to continue for, even for races that are not in the mountains and everything.
Yeah.
But after I DNF'd, you continued. Can you tell your part of that, like your experience after leaving Half Moon?
When we were coming down into Half Moon, I thought that was going to be like at mile, I think it was like 42.5, 42.6. So it was like mile 40. And I think I wasn't completely out of water, but I was low. And I'm like, yeah, oh yeah, you know, and it was like, I'm not going to take this gel. I'm almost there. I'm not going to refill this water. It's just 2 miles away. And so I'm picking up the pace because I'm like, man, if I run faster now, that's more time at the aid station. I want to say it was right at mile 40. So I saw Cameron Haynes. He was headed back up. Yeah. And so at that time, I'm like, man, I'm only 4 miles behind Cameron Haynes. I'm in a good spot. Yeah. So like at that point, there he's 40 miles in. I was like, I'm in a good position. I'm going to finish this 100 miles. I'm doing great. And then it was like mile 42. And I'm like, man, where's Half Moon? I don't see anything around here at all. And then you were catching back up to me at that point, and you're kind of like my dose of reality. And you're like, Danny, we're not going to make it, man. Like this cutoff time. And I was kind of like, oh yeah, man. And then with how Half Moon was being out and back, you can't even enjoy that downhill. Cause you're like, the steeper that downhill is, it's going to be a steeper uphill on the way back out.
Yeah.
And so I just kept being like, man, this is too steep, man. Like Half Moon's going to be down in this hole. This is some BS. And then you were rolling your ankle a bunch there too. Cause you're like, we got to make up some time. And so we're really cruising down all this loose rock and everything. And that's where I'm like, oh man, I'm really looking at my watch. I'm like, man. And then we caught up to another runner. And I heard you telling her of like, because you're doing all the math on the pace that we'd have to keep to finish it. And so I'm like, oh, that was what first hit me of like, I might not finish. And
dude, we, for as fast as we were going, my watch was giving us, hey, you got to keep this pace in order to finish at this time. And I think we were running like a 12 and a half minute mile running downhill. And we would have to keep that pace for the remainder of the run to finish at like 6:30. Like it was past what the cutoff time was. And that's when I was, son of a bitch, like we gotta pick this up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Since I'm like new to ultra running, like I've never even considered a DNF before. Like I've never like not finished something.
Yeah.
And so that was like in my mind of like, oh man, I immediately start thinking my dad and my cousin Will, man, they took time off of work. They drove all the way over here, you know, other than so like including the starting line, this is only my third time seeing them. So yeah, that's for like all of us runners. That was your only third time seeing your crew start Ibex and then Half Moon. I'm like, man, they've been out here all day and I just wasted their day. Like I'm going to DNF here. Like I'm not going to make it because I think we only had like 45 minutes from the cutoff. So I come into that aid station like pretty defeated. And I'm telling them like, man, like, what do you guys think? Like, I think I should call it with how slow I'm moving. Like, I'm not going to make it. Like, I'm just going to turn around, head back up here. And then we're going to DNF. Like, I'm sorry I wasted your guys' time. And they're like, no, man, you didn't waste our time. Like, this has been awesome. You're going to get back out there. You're going to do it. You know, everything I needed to hear. And I'm like, I don't know, you guys. I don't think it's a smart play. Like, Danny, if you quit right here on your own, still able, you're going to regret it. Go back out there and make them make you DNF. Yeah. Don't let yourself DNF. So you can at least say you gave it your all. And I'm like, man, like you guys are right. I need to get back out there. So, you know, we're changing into kind of some of my night gear, get some compression pants on, my long sleeve and everything. Yeah. And it was super awesome. There was this complete stranger, this lady that my dad and my cousin like made friends with. She wasn't there with anybody at that time. She was there to support her husband who'd already came through.
Oh, wow.
And she just got visiting like with my family and they kind of started telling her about me and then the relay and different things.
Yeah.
And so she kind of became like a crew member when I came in. I thought she was a volunteer for the race. I thought when she was one of Megan's people, cause she come in, asked me all sorts of questions, how I'm doing. She took my shoes off my feet, my socks, cleaned up my feet, this complete stranger. That's what's so awesome about ultra running. This complete stranger cleaning my feet and putting on a new pair of socks.
Yeah.
And like, it was like halfway through that experience. Like I started putting it together and I'm like, she's not a volunteer. She's just a person here. And she was just so awesome. And, you know, she was giving me all the positive talk too. And I was like, yeah, no, get out there. Then she made a stop for a picture before I took back off of like, no, you guys all need a picture together. And then I took back off, you know, then that's, I saw you kind of sitting there getting checked out by the medical team. And then saw Levi and Brocade and they're like, hey, Dan, you making a go at it? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to give her hell. That's all I can do at this point. And I'm like, all right, you know, like, let's do this. And I kind of had that good feeling, that adrenaline.
Yeah.
But then once I got back up at elevation, I'm not sure what elevation level it was. But then it's like the wind was back out of the sails, like that governor was put back on my legs. Then I started to see lightning. I'm like, man, like, I'm not sure about this, but I kind of kept trudging along. Then I met a sweeper And I'm pretty sure he was with that guy that was throwing up. And I'm talking to the sweeper and I'm asking him about the lightning. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, man, you're about to be above the tree line. And he's like, so I'm not sure what you think. And I'm like, oh man, like be above the tree line with the trekking poles, yeah, fully exposed. He said himself, like, I'm never going to tell a runner to quit a race, but I do have to tell you my satellite phone's not working. So if anybody up here gets struck by lightning and I'm the one responding, like, you're not going to get help for 24 hours and they're going to be hauling a body out of here. And so I'm like, man, like that might be making my decision for me. Right when we were talking about that, like a big old lightning bolt hits up close, what seemed close to where the trail was.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, yeah, that's not worth it. I got kids. I got to make it home too. And I'm like, all right, that's my decision. That's a sign. I really felt like, you know, with us, how we were treating the course, like with respect and everything, like the mountains with respect, almost felt like that was the mountains giving me a sign of like, hey man, if you keep pushing it, you might not get struck by lightning, but you might fall off the course. So that was kind of what I was seeing. Like, you know, this is a sign. It's meant to be to kind of turn around now. Yeah. And so I turned around and that's where I met up with Jason and Eric, and they were kind of, and Phyllis climbing back up. We sat there for a while, man. It was, I don't know, it was like 20, 30 minutes debating on what everyone should do. Wow. Those guys all went for it. And I kept heading back. At that point, I was worried. I'm like, man, I'm going to get back to Half Moon and my crew is going to be waiting at like Crandall for me. Yeah. Like, how am I going to get back? Because that sweeper, the way he made it sound like was that Half Moon was going to be all packed up and everyone was going to be gone or asleep. And I didn't know if that was a good idea because, like I said, I didn't know what I was coming back into. So I was like running 9-minute miles. Ooh, coming back, man, down. And thankfully, coming through the trees, I see their campfire. I see all their lights. I hear their cowbells.
Yeah.
And I come running in and they're like, oh, hey. And like, ask me what was going on. And I tell them, yeah, like, man, you come in running so good. We thought you were one of the sweepers. Like, you don't look like you just ran 50 miles. And at that point, I was like, bittersweet. Like, man, I don't want to hear that. Like, I had a DNF. Like, don't tell me like I'm running good, you know. But yeah, no, everyone there was awesome. They were able to get a message out to my crew. They actually were watching my tracker and they were already on their way back. So I only had to wait like a half hour. But yeah, those people there at Half Moon, they were awesome. They had a bunch of food and they hung out, and it was kind of telling everyone that was there that had already dropped before me, they were laid up, like they couldn't move. And I'm having to get up and move my camp chair around the campfire because the smoke was in my face, and I was up moving around feeling good.
Yeah.
It was bittersweet. And then, yeah, my crew had to come pick me up.
Well, hey, now that this is your first DNF, what positive experiences do you think that you've gained from this particular race that'll help you in future running events?
There's a few different things, you know, kind of just the appreciation, like not take any of it for granted, whether it's the training, whether it's the race itself, having a foundation, but kind of not having a foundation. And I built upon that. So then moving into this next running season, it's like, okay, let's build on top of that even more.
Definitely.
You know, I feel like I really did give it my best shot on my training, but now I'm not starting back at zero. You know, I'm starting at a higher level. You know, there's nothing wrong with DNFing. Maybe once you're an ultra runner, you understand, but I feel like you don't really understand until you DNF yourself.
Yeah.
Of like, hey man, like just getting to the starting line and then also giving it an attempt. Like that's nothing to be ashamed of. Like, you know.
And so now you're moving into race number 4 on your ultra run sign up, which is the Tianhui 100.
Yeah.
When is this happening?
This is happening September 17th. After the Crazy Mountain 100, and kind of, I was really bummed that guy that was going to pace me, Tim, he never got to pace me because he was waiting for me like at Crandall or Forest Lake.
Yeah.
And I never made it to him. Yeah. And so after the race and everything was done, I was texting him and gave him a call and we talked, and he's like, no man, like that race was just a lot tougher than a lot of people realize. Like, you have nothing to be ashamed of.
Definitely.
He's like, you know what? He's like, my advice is you're in the best shape of your life right now. Find another race like this season, this fall or winter, find another 100-miler and do it. You're going to finish it.
Yeah.
And so I kind of hem and hawed about it for a while. And then I found that Tianhui Country 100 I waited to pull the trigger. I talked to my crew and I'm like, do you guys want to give it another go? Like, I'm not going to sign you guys up for something you don't want to do.
Yeah.
And they're like, hell yeah, man, we're in. Like, let's do this. And I'm like, all right, that's all I needed to hear. Let's sign up for this race and give it another shot.
Heck yeah. Well, good luck with that. We'll keep everybody posted, you know, through our channels and everything on your progress. And in December, when you're back on for the Christmas episode, you can let us know how you did with that.
Yeah.
All right. So now I have some warm-up questions before we get into the five to stay alive. Warm-up question number one. The cast of The Reservation Dogs were on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. I personally think the show is a great depiction of our native humor. Paulina Alexis, a.k.a. Willie Jack in the show, says that native people are so funny, and this is the first time that it's ever been shown before, and that's why she thinks that so many people are falling in love with the show. Do you agree with this, and can you expand a little bit on native humor?
Yeah, I totally agree with it. That's a Indian humor, the res humor. It's like jabbing you all the time. Like if you're not getting jabbed, like they're not picking on you, but if you're not getting jabbed, that's kind of almost picking on you. Like you're not in until like you're getting jabbed. And that's just so true and just makes you like, you know, we all can relate with different stories, but especially like I loved the episode with Willie Jack when they were out hunting.
Yeah.
And because I just related to that one so much and it was hilarious because it was like no trespassing. Like she was under the impression it was their land, but her dad's like, well, yeah, no, it used to be ours, but now it's this white man's land. So they're sneaking around on it.
Yeah.
And they're just BSing, sitting there together, telling stories. And so that's like, man, like that just brought back so many memories like for myself.
Heck yeah, that's cool. Hey, in season two, Uncle Brownie and Bucky say a prayer by the lake before they break in the curse. What song do they sing upon releasing the artifacts into the water?
Oh, man, I can't remember. But it's funny because, like all the kids there, it's before their time. So they're just like, okay, what's going on? You guys are supposed to be elders. Like, don't know if you guys are being serious or not.
It's Tom Petty's Free Fallin'.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, hey, that is all the warm-up questions that I have. Is there anything you want to go back and touch up on before we move into the next section?
Nope.
Okay. And now it's time for the five to stay alive. These are five questions that I ask every guest about themselves and what keeps them going. Contestant Danny Joe, are you ready to answer the five to stay alive?
Yes, I'm ready.
Question number one, do you run with or without music? And if so, what is one power song on your running playlist that motivates you?
Yeah, so I used to be always music, but getting more and more into trails, I run without it a lot, but I still have my headphones with me. Okay. I usually like to keep it for like if I have a tough stretch, like a tough climb coming up, love to kind of throw on some songs, listen to podcasts too.
Okay.
And for a song, like I've thought about this. So I've always thought like, man, if and when I'm on the Run Shoe Diaries, like what's going to be my song?
Yeah.
And so I've changed my mind a few times.
Okay.
Like, but then there's some too. I'm like, man, like that's a lot of cussing in that one.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a censored version. Like it wouldn't be that good. I was running the Ancient Lakes 50 miler, there's this perfect song that came up.
Okay.
So my girls, they're really into Spider-Man and they love the Into the Spider-Verse cartoon. And there's this song, it's called What's Up Danger by Blackway and Black Caviar from the soundtrack to that movie. And in that movie, that song comes up when Miles Morales finally gets a hold of his powers and he can be Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And it's just like super pumped up. My girls dance to it every time. And that song came on when I was getting out of the pain cave for that 50 miler. Once I just crested the top of the mountain, that song came on in that race. And I just like got pumped up. And then like my girls were there with me. And it's like ever since then, I'm like, that's my song.
Heck yeah. All right, we're going to get that added to the Spotify guest playlist. So keep in mind that this song will be added and it is a representation of you. Question number two. What are some things in your life that have positively changed since you started running?
There's so many. One, definitely mental and spiritual health. We focus a lot on like physical health and just like being in shape. Yeah. But running, man, it definitely helps you with different stress to day-to-day life. And then especially being out in the trails, like for me, I love running on my res because I really do feel like a spiritual connection out there when we're on our lands.
Yeah.
And so I feel like since running, that's just helped me a bunch.
Question number three. In your opinion, what is one thing that an athlete should avoid in their journey to becoming a better runner?
Comparing yourself against others.
Yeah.
To where I got caught up in that a lot. You know, man, there's no other ultra runners on my res, but there's a couple other runners.
Yeah.
And there's one guy, he's just like super fast, but there's this this female, her and I were like neck and neck on Strava for pace last year.
Yeah.
And you know, I would top her by like 5 second pace, like per mile. And then she'd top me like the next, I don't even know if she knew we were racing, but like I knew we were racing.
Yeah.
And I think that resulted in some of like my tendonitis and issues because I was just pushing my pace and running so hard. So yeah, definitely that's a big piece of advice is like, don't get caught up in that. Like run your own race. Like it's you against you, whether it's in your mind or your own body, and just, you know, don't get caught up in all the other people.
Right. Question number four, finish this statement. When it comes to long distance running, Danny cannot leave the house without his.
My watch, my Garmin watch.
There you go.
Yeah. Cause I got to know how far I'm going. You know, I don't keep track of pace as much, but man, I got to keep track of those miles. And, you know, I'm not pushing for pace. So I'm not on my Strava, like showing off how fast I'm going, but man, I like to see all my miles. I like to have that Strava post like, oh yeah, man, I put on a 15 miler today. I put on a 20 miler.
All right. Question number five, do you have a running workout or life mantra?
Yeah. I didn't for the longest time, but then last year, I don't know if it's quite a mantra, but it's kind of almost like a mindset of, especially after Kamloops and everything, if our ancestors could get through that, I could get through anything. If it's, I'm doing a race, you know, like if my ancestors could get through all that for me to be here today, I can run this next mile. I can get to that finish line. This is nothing in comparison to what they went through. So that's kind of what I use while I'm running to help get me out of the pain cave or in those tough spots.
Heck yeah, I love that. Hey, thank you for answering the five to stay alive. Those are all the questions that I have for this conversation. Is there anyone that you want to shout out, or is there anything you'd like to say, add, or revisit before we bring this episode to a close?
Guess I'd give a few shout outs. Kind of said before, a shout out to my dad and my cousin Will for being awesome, supporting me in my running. You know, definitely shout out to my buddy Matt helped me along, Randy for getting me into the running, and for Chanel, she was the female that didn't know we were racing. She's definitely helped keep me on this path, and definitely a shout out to my old high school coach Switek for helping me get on this journey in the first place.
That's awesome, man. Hey Danny, thank you for agreeing to be a guest on the show. Your charismatic and fun personality teaches us to always be and have faith in ourselves. Your willingness to go above and beyond for purposes other than your own teaches us that it's okay to go the extra mile. Lastly, thank you for doing more than your fair share in creating a positive community for all of us. We definitely appreciate athletes like you. So again, Danny, it was definitely an honor to have you on the show.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for having me.
You are definitely welcome, my friend. Hey, get back to training, and I'll see you out there on the trails.
All right.
We're approaching the finish line, but before we cross, here's some news and views. That was Danny Brigman. And like many of us, he's creating positive moves in creating an all-inclusive and safe running environment for us all. I want to emphasize his support and representation of the MMIW Red Handprint. Here's Danny.
Yeah, so the significance with it, you know, it symbolizes the women going missing and murdered and being silenced. And then the red hand, the red is supposed to be a color that the spirits can see. And so that's why I have the color red. And for me, it's one of those things, you know, being Native, we know our challenges, but, you know, we also have benefits in society being men, a lot of them that we don't realize. And that's something that, you know, I try as hard as I can to not take for granted. And, you know, it's different little things like, you know, I mentioned running at night or in the morning. I never have to worry if I'm running and there's a car coming by me that they're going to snatch me up or something. Like, that never crosses my mind. I'm never out on a city trail worried about, hey, is that guy trying to size me up or, you know, someone trying to snatch me. I never have to really worry about where I'm running. And that's something I take for granted a lot, that, you know, women, that they kind of have to be on the lookout for those things. So I feel like with these movements, you kind of need to break down those barriers to kind of get out of, for better or worse term, kind of like the echo chamber of like you and I having a conversation about like, yeah, we both know, but we need to get beyond that and educate those that don't know.
From representing and running in support of the MMIW movement to organizing a 215-mile relay run for Kamloops, and among other things, Danny is definitely representing both the indigenous and running communities in a positive light. Thank you, Danny. Your hard work does not go unnoticed. Keep it up, my friend. Next, Danny is adding What's Up Danger by Blackway to the Run Shoe Diary Spotify guest playlist. This song is taken from the Into the Spider-Verse soundtrack. And you probably already knew that this was coming because of our conversation, but in honor of Danny's relation to Miles Kennedy, I'm adding We Will Roam by Slash featuring Miles Kennedy. And that brings the Spotify guest playlist to 24 songs. Download and enjoy. And with that, we have crossed the finish line. So if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or guest recommendations, contact me at runshoe.diaries@gmail.com. Again, that is runshoe.diaries@gmail.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Keyword search, Run Shoe Diaries. Thank you for listening to the Run Shoe Diaries podcast, episode 16, with Danny Joe Brigman. Until next time, remember that with each step comes the decision to take another. So keep putting one foot in front of the other, because it's amazing what you can do on your own 2 feet in a mile.